On today's hefty episode of Stone Cold Sports Talk, Taft, Jay, William, and I open with what we would do if we were college football czar for a day, break down the New Year's Six bowl games, and give our locks of the week. We then talk early 2010s Oregon in the throwback sports thing of the week, and dabble in the NBA and facts or fake news. It was a long episode, but a pretty good one that you won't want to miss. Stick around. Stone Cold Sports Talk, episode 29, the College Football Bowl Bonanza Extravaganza, even though, as you'll find out, our predictions are only for the games that we might half plan on watching. Not a lot of watchable bowl games, especially when you have teams like Tennessee, who got into one and opted out, and South Carolina at 2-8, who had to get COVIDed out of a bowl game. College football playoff rankings, final ones of the year out on Sunday. Number one, Alabama. Number two, Clemson. Number three, Ohio State. And semi-controversially, number four, Notre Dame. And then first two out, five, Texas A&M. Six, Oklahoma. So I was thinking about this earlier in the week, and there obviously are a lot of people calling for change to the playoff system, justice for Cincinnati. William texted us and said justice for A&M upon the news that Notre Dame had made the playoff. So our first segment is, gentlemen, you are college football czar for one day. What is the meaningful piece of college football reform that you attempt to get through? Jay, you go ahead and start us off.
So I'm actually going to go in the opposite direction of the playoff expansion, because I'm split on the playoff expansion, because I do agree that teams like Cincinnati deserve a shot, but we struggled to get four teams good enough this year. Like, this year's obviously a clear two-horse race. And so I just have a hard time seeing, like, playoff watch numbers have been down the past couple of years because they are blowout games. And you can only imagine what Alabama would this year would probably be Alabama versus Oregon. And that's just not even – that's not worth watching right now. So I'm kind of split on playoff expansion. But one thing that I have been very adamant with for actually a couple of years, there should only be one Heisman finalist allowed per team. And this year is especially true because I'm sick of the Mac Jones Heisman crap, because you cannot be not even the first, second, or maybe even third best player on your own offense when you consider Devontae Smith, Najee Harris, and left tackle Alex Leatherwood is a freak. You cannot be the third or fourth best player on your own offense and win the Heisman Trophy. I cannot stand anybody who will argue against that. It makes me sick. Last year, Ohio State was an anomaly because Chase Young was a generational defensive player who had the stats to back it up, but we all know Justin Fields didn't have a shot over Jalen Hurts and Joe Burrow. So I'm the first thing I would do would be to implement a rule. There can only be one Heisman finalist per college football team, because if you're not the best player on your own team, you're not the best player in the country. And if you're not the clear best player on your own team, then you're not the clear best player in the country. So Mac Jones, I will be very livid if he wins the Heisman, because he's not even the second, third best player on his own offense.
Jay, with a somewhat cosmetic reformation of the Heisman Trophy voting system. William, going much more fundamental, grassroots, et cetera, wants to reform the playoff system. What are your modifications to the college football playoff?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm going with the generic suggestion here with the 18 playoff. I mean, this year, I think the best option would probably be the BCS system, just going for an Alabama-Clemson final. As Jay was talking about, having that two-horse race with Ohio State and Notre Dame, I think are pretty much out of the picture. I think Bama and Clemson are going to run the table in those playoff games. But at least to give group of five teams a chance, I think what we saw from BYU not even having a chance to play in a New Year's Six Bowl, and seeing what Zach Wilson did to Dylan Gabriel and UCF, despite my bet that UCF would take that one handily, backfired. I think that the Texas A&M example, and especially the TCU example from 2014, I think we all remember the Trevon Boykin team that I think had one or two losses. So you're leaving out – the problem with this 14 playoff is you're usually going to leave out one really good one-loss team, or a strong two-loss team in a conference like the SEC or the Big Ten. And the 18 playoff will likely eliminate some controversy in that, and it'll also give group of five teams a chance, which I think people want to see, even though it's not as much like March Madness where upsets are possible. So that's what I want to see. That's what I, you know, in years, in coming years, I'd like to see. This year, I'd probably go for the BCS approach, but that's just what I want to see.
Taft wants to reform non-conference scheduling.
Yes, I want the college football world to encourage more out-of-conference, competitive out-of-conference regular season games. I think it would be good for the game if we saw more games like Clemson versus Auburn in week two or Ohio State versus Washington in week three, games like that, because in the 6 years of the college football playoff, the committee has made it clear that the best way to get in is to have 0-1 losses, and that's encouraged teams to not schedule tough out-of-conference games, because if you're in the SEC, you already have a really tough schedule, and scheduling someone out-of-conference that's going to be a hard win just doesn't really make sense, because if you lose that game, then you're putting yourself in a really tough position to ultimately make the playoff, because it could give you two losses, and a two-loss team has never gotten in. And I really don't see it happening based on the decisions that the committee has made recently if it does stay at four teams. So I think that the best way for college football, the biggest change that I would make for the sake of us fans sitting at home watching games in the early weeks of the season, I think that there should definitely be more competitive out-of-conference games.
I'm going to zag here. I think a lot of the reason that there's so much push to expand to eight playoff teams is that in the four-team system, we're seeing that the gap between spots 3 and 8 is not really that large, that especially this season, the difference between Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Oklahoma, Florida, A&M, things like that is not that large. And I think that for that reason, and there are a lot of modifications here, I'm not going to allow Alabama and Clemson to at least continue to go romp through their conferences and make the playoff every year. I think that because of the controversy, because of the lopsidedness of a lot of these playoff games, I think it's time to maybe consider going back to a two-team system. I was running through some of the data from the playoff historically. 3 semifinal games ever have been decided by single digits. More games, 4 games, have been decided by 30 or more. So there are more 30-plus point blowouts in the semifinals than there are single-digit close games. 6 games have been decided by 20 or more. The average margin of victory of a college football semifinal game is 21.25 points. The median is 19. So I think that college football ought to go back to just having the national championship game 1 versus 2, but with the following changes to entry requirements. 1, to be eligible for the playoff, teams must play 10 conference games. It's so unfair that a team like Florida or Georgia has somewhat of an easier path to make the playoff in most years. And obviously the SEC West was not as good this year because there was so much coaching turnover, but historically it is not unfair to say that the SEC West is basically playing probably like a 2-game more difficult conference schedule if you're in the SEC West, because the average middle of the road team in the SEC West is probably a Mississippi State or an Ole Miss, and they're a lot better than a Kentucky or a Tennessee or a South Carolina has been in the last 3 to 5 years, obviously accepting that 1 year when Kentucky went 9-3 or whatever and made the Citrus Bowl. But beside that, the middle of the road in the SEC East is a lot easier. So if you make it a 10-game conference schedule, it means that in the Big Ten, whatever division's playing easier, they still got to play 4 games or 5 games out of their own division. In the SEC East, Florida and Georgia, teams that really want to make the playoff, have to go cross over to the West more. And more importantly, it makes it less likely that you're going to get really terrible non-conference games, because the second requirement should be that you must play at least 1 non-conference game against the Power Five. So your 10-game schedule is, you got, or your 12-game schedule is, you have 10 in your conference, 1 against the Power Five, and then you can't, no more teams can make the playoff by playing FCS schools. That obviously brings some concerns about FCS program well-being. My argument is, if your FCS program is not really profitable and it's kind of a giant suck on the athletic department in times like these, maybe it's time to consider that you don't need to have football at your school. And then finally, and this is the crucial point, reduce scholarships from 85 to 75, because Alabama, I think in 2018, and Jay, correct me if I'm wrong here, fact check this, Jalen Hurts was their starter. Their second string was Tua, and their third string was Mac Jones, correct? Was Mac Jones around back then?
That was correct. He was a freshman. And also at the same Yes. No, the season before, Ohio State had JT Barrett, Dwayne Haskins, and Joe Burrow all at quarterback. It's kind of a similar situation.
If you reduce scholarships from 85 to 75, it allows some of those programs on the outside looking into the playoff picture to get more of those third-string scholarship guys who aren't going to play until they're juniors at Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, and kind of shares the love a little bit. So you get programs like Iowa State becoming contenders. TCU gets a couple more scholarship guys. Middle-of-the-road SEC teams, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, maybe they're getting more 4 and 5 stars than 3 and 4 stars. And I think that if you reduce that, it reduces the likelihood that Alabama and Clemson can every single year win 10 conference games, beat their Power 5 non-conference opponent, and beat whatever Group of 5 team they have to play because they can't play an FCS schedule. So that's my solution to get more parity in college football and stop giving us New Year's Day blowouts where, as we all know, Notre Dame and Ohio State, book it, are going to get curb stomped. Actually, not Ohio State, but Notre Dame. Definitely.
Stone, I got a comment for you. Last year with LSU, Ohio State, and Clemson, how would your system have worked with 3 12-0 teams that deserved a spot?
I think that if LSU, Clemson, and Ohio State all had to play a 10-game conference schedule and play one Power 5 out-of-conference opponent, the likelihood of all three of them going 12-0 and winning their conference championship is reduced significantly. Is that fair?
Sure.
That would be my response to that, is I think you're going to get fewer. And that was the first time in a while that there were three undefeated regular season teams in the Power 5. Anyway, college football's are for a day. That's what I'm doing. Jay goes to one Heisman finalist, William to an 18 playoff, and Taft with getting rid of cupcake scheduling. Our second segment, bowl game previews. A lot of stuff on the slate. We're going to go for the most interesting games. So basically New Year's 6 plus a couple exciting ones before New Year's 6 kicks off with the Cotton Bowl on December 30th. First, we have one the day after Christmas, 9-1 Liberty against number 12 Coastal Carolina, who is 11-0 and a 7-point favorite. Your picks, William, you start us off.
Yeah, I'm going to ride a few frees here and go with the Flames, 41-35 over Coastal. Yes, Coastal's undefeated. Yes, they beat BYU, who was extremely impressive yesterday. But I like the looks of Malik Willis, their dual threat quarterback, and I think that this will be somewhat of a shootout. But I'm going to go with Hugh Freeze out coaching the Chanticleers here.
Taft, you're up.
I don't really like the spread here. I think Liberty's getting disrespected by being 7-point dogs. I do think Coastal Carolina is going to pull it out. They're used to winning close games, and it's hard to go undefeated, but I think that they're going to be very motivated to finish that perfect season. It'll be interesting to see if they pull off a UCF stunt, if they do win and try and claim themselves as national champions. I don't think they will because they're not as dumb as that school in Orlando. But I have Coastal Carolina pulling it out closer than the experts predict. 34-31 Chanticleers.
I need to get you a fat Ticonderoga pencil that you can point at the camera and go, closer than the experts predict.
Taft literally took the words out of my mouth. I got Liberty covering, but I got Coastal 31-27.
I have Liberty 34-33 in an absolute thriller in the FBC Mortgage Cure Bowl. I like Hugh Freeze. If you have a quarterback in the last 2 years whose name was Buckshot Calvert, which Liberty had last year, I'm going to pick you. I'm sorry. It's just that easy. I think that Jesus narrowly beats the Fighting Mullets in the Cure Bowl. And then, of course, you have the Cheez-It Bowl on December 29th, top 25 matchup, number 21, Oklahoma State, who is a 2-point favorite against number 18, Miami. The Cowboys come in at 7-3, Hurricanes at 8-2. William, your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I don't really know where to go on this one. I mean, I think very equal teams and very similar conferences. I would probably give the ACC a leg up here and go with Miami 30-26. I just think Derek King's probably going to cause some problems. And Oklahoma State's been a little inconsistent on offense. Who knows if Chuba's going to even play. So I'm going to go with Miami and rep the ACC.
Yeah, Chuba has opted out, but they've still had success in the run game. I think it's going to be very tight. I don't really know who's going to end up pulling it out. I think it's going to be within a field goal or something like that. But like William said, I'm just going to go with Derek King. And the Miami offense Hurricanes 41, Cowboys 38.
This is kind of your classic Cheez It Bowl matchup. Like, yeah, just like, you, like, we just don't know who to pick. And there could be 10 combined turnovers, like what seems to happen every Cheez It Bowl. So I don't know. I'm taking Miami 24-23 in kind of a late game field goal heroics kind of game. But I would not be surprised if this is like a 12-9, 13-10 final. Just like weird stuff happens in the Cheez-It Bowl in the past couple of years. So I'm taking Miami by a point, but who really knows what the score could be.
Cheez-It Bowl historian Jay Benzette might have flipped me here. I'm going to go against the grain here. I'm going to take Oklahoma State. Obviously, Chuba still up in the air. I honestly couldn't tell you why. I just think I like Oklahoma State. I like Mike Gundy in a bowl game a little more than I like Manny Diaz, though he deserves a lot of credit for keeping Miami around. And at 8-2, they were interesting in the ACC. Now, New Year's Six Bowl, first one, December 30th, number 7 Florida, who's 3-point favorites against number 6 Oklahoma. Shockingly enough, the over-under is at 72, and I think all of us might have the over here. William, you lead us off. Your thoughts on the Cotton Bowl, which will be the first one, the first New Year's Six Bowl in Jerry World, but we get two this year.
Yeah, Stone, I'm going to make you proud. I'm going to go with the Gators. I was very inspired by the performance they put on in the SEC Championship game. I mean, they never backed down against Bama. It was impressive putting up, you know, I think we knew coming in it'd be a shootout and Trask could keep up with Jones and Devontae Smith throughout that game. And I think that they're going to be pretty motivated coming into this Cotton Bowl. They want to end the season on a high note. And there's been some doubts around Florida after their, you know, with three losses on their schedule, but there is no Kyle Pitts on this roster, which hurts, but obviously there are still plenty of weapons on offense. And I'm going to go Florida 42, Oklahoma 38 in a shootout.
I think both of these teams are hot, even though Florida's coming off two straight losses, which is just weird because they looked so good against Bama in the SEC Championship. But I think Oklahoma is a little hotter. Spencer Rattler looked really, really good, and the Oklahoma offense was very explosive. I'm excited to see what he does in his Sooners career. I think it's going to be a shootout, like William said. I have Oklahoma pulling it out 38-35. I think the absence of Pitts will really hurt. And I just like this Oklahoma Sooners team. I think that they're one of the hottest teams in college football right now.
This is going to sound ridiculous, and bear with me. But you do not want to see Oklahoma right now because they are finally playing some sort of defense. And if the Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield teams had this defense, they would have won a national championship, and I don't think it would have been that hard. So I'm taking OU 38-34. Right on this over-under stone, right at 72, so I'm kind of split. I just think you don't want to see Oklahoma right now because they always have the offense, and they have not lost a game. Y'all don't realize this. They have not lost a game since October 3rd. Like, they lost two early, but by the time this game is played, it'll be basically 3 months since they have lost a football game. And they are hot. They've got a great coach, and they finally have a blank, defense. It's ridiculous to think about, but Oklahoma is playing defense. So I'm taking the Sooners 38-34.
I'm going to go with Florida here in this game. Dan Mullen, 7-2 all time in bowl games as a head coach, dating back to his years at Mississippi State. On top of that, he's 2-0 in his bowl games, both New Year's Six since he's been at Florida. Oklahoma, obviously a very different matchup because last year, Virginia in the Orange Bowl, and the year before that, a waning Michigan in the Peach Bowl, not exactly like Oklahoma, who has won 7 or 8 games in a row now. I just like Florida, though, because I think that even without Pitts, they've been game planning without him for a good part of the season with him missing a lot of time. So many weapons on the offense. And I think if Florida could hang with Alabama's offense in a shootout and put up that many points in Alabama's defense, I think they'll be fine. I think the Sooners run out of gas late. Florida wins. I got Florida 45, Oklahoma 37. Taft, your dog's in the Peach Bowl. But William, you lead us off first, and then we'll let the Bulldog speak his mind.
Yeah, I think despite Jay, we're all the same opinion here, going with the dogs. I don't know. You know, I talked about the 18 playoff and how giving teams like Cincinnati a chance would be good for college football, but Georgia now with a pretty good passing offense and JT Daniels instead of, I think if the mailman was playing here, I would probably lean towards Cincinnati just to be contrarian, but I think with JT there, George Pickens, I think Zamir White's playing, so their whole offense is still intact. And then obviously we know what that defense can do. I don't think Cincinnati has seen that all this season. And I still really like Desmond Ridder and Jared Doakes, these two guys on Cincinnati's offense. But, I mean, this is a top-tier SEC team, and I think that Georgia's going to win 33-21.
Unbiased opinion here. Georgia looks good with JT Daniels. Very good. They have covered and hit the over in every single game they played with JT since he was a starter, since he took over the starting role against Mississippi State a couple, I think it was about 5 weeks ago at this point. But this Georgia team is very explosive, and they've had a good defense all year, especially now that almost everyone is healthy again. There was a part of the season where a majority of their defense was hurt, and the Florida game happened to be right in the middle of that. So now that Georgia's back and healthy on both sides of the ball and they found their quarterback, I mean, this Dogs team looks very, very good. And the fact that basically no one is leaving on their offense, it's going to be very exciting to see what they do next year. I have the Dogs, of course, but I think it's going to be a blowout. I'm not disrespecting the Cincinnati team. I think that they're a very, very good Group 5 team. They don't deserve a spot in the playoff. I'm sorry. That argument is just not valid because although they're undefeated, I just don't think that they are – and they would not be 9-0 in the SEC or even the ACC or Big Ten. I have Georgia 45-20 in a blowout in Mercedes-Benz.
See, this is kind of your classic Think back to the UCF-Auburn game. Think back to – I'm trying to think of Group of Five versus Power Five New Year's Six Bowls.
The following year when UCF got demolished by LSU.
What? Western Michigan? Western Michigan played?
Western Michigan, Wisconsin. Western Michigan won that game. UCF, yeah, they played LSU. That was Joe Burrow's coming out party. That's an exception. I just got – Cincinnati is like people disrespect Cincinnati. Cincinnati is good. They are a really good football team. And
they'd beat Michigan.
It's not hard. If this were a regular season game, I'd be with Taft. I'd take Georgia big time. But it's just a postseason. Why is Georgia going to show up? Why do they want to show up? It's like, it's a motivation thing for me. I'm taking Cincinnati 43-42 because I honestly think they'll tie it up and go for two in like the last minute and get it. That's why 43-42. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be close. I got Cincinnati, but I would not be surprised to see Georgia pull it out in the end either.
I think Georgia's going to put this to bed the same way they put the whole Texas. Did Texas stomp Georgia? I can't remember what happened.
Yeah, Texas won that game.
Never mind. Oh, that was the we're back, and then that was we're back part two, and then the decline with Tom Herman. It's too bad they couldn't.
That was a different Georgia team, though.
Oh no, I agree. I think Georgia's going to put this whole thing to bed because I think that the last thing that you would want if you're Kirby Smart is for playoff expansion and for this narrative to continue because it just means there's a higher likelihood that terrible Group of Five teams get ranked higher in the final CFP poll than your Georgias, your Floridas, teams like that. I think Georgia's defense is legit. I think with this offense playing the way that it closed out the season, they'll win. I got Georgia 30-17 in a relatively low scoring game, just under that under of 50.5. I don't know. Cincinnati, show me something and maybe I'll just kidding. I'm not going to consider playoff expansion. All right. Rose Bowl time, a tradition unlike any other, except like the Masters, which is kind of a bit more traditional. But anyway, the Rose Bowl at Jerry World, which I think is the unofficial name. Of this bowl game, Alabama, number one team in the country, hosting 10-1 Notre Dame, the controversial number four team in the country. William, your thoughts on this impending blowout?
Yeah, I think it's going to be somewhat of a blowout. I mean, this Notre Dame defense had been previously hyped up as one of the best defenses in the country, and then we saw what happened with Clemson last week, and Alabama is a more potent offensive team. So I am going to go with Bama 45-24. I think that honestly, that's pretty generous considering Notre Dame lost by 27 to Clemson and only put up 3 points in their last appearance in the playoff, I believe. Yeah, I don't think that they're going to have any answer for Bama's offensive weapons, and it'll be a blowout.
It's going to be hard to pick against Alabama, not only in this game, but also in the national championship, which they will be playing in. Notre Dame is a good team. They have a good defense. They proved that throughout the regular season. I think that they're getting a little too much hate after getting stomped by Clemson. Just a very good Clemson team that had a lot of motivation going into the ACC championship game. However, Alabama is just way too much for the side that also is going to be trying to prove themselves for the Heisman Trophy. Mac Jones, Devontae Smith. I mean, you saw how lethal that connection was in the SEC championship game. I have the Tide 42-27.
See, Stone, I know you've given me some crap for this score prediction. I have Bama 48-35, but only because Notre Dame scores like a touchdown in the last minute, just a meaningless touchdown. So Notre Dame, I go to UNC Chapel Hill for those new listeners on this call. And when we played Notre Dame a couple weeks ago, their defense looked all world. Like when we have all of our pieces together, I would put our offense in front of Clemson's. And that sounds ridiculous, but I think there's a serious case to be made for it. And we scored 3 points in the second half against Notre Dame. 3 points in the last three quarters, excuse me, against Notre Dame. So they can play like that. And if you watch the game on Saturday, the first quarter, Notre Dame won the first quarter against Clemson. They got down the field, kicked a field goal, forced a turnover, went down, missed another field goal, and then got in the red zone again, didn't score. They went to the red zone 3 times in the first quarter and got 3 points out of it. So the Notre Dame's defense did what they could with a very poor-looking offensive performance. And I just – something about Brian Kelly is going to get his team motivated to cover a 19.5-point spread. So I got him with a late touchdown. I don't think it'll be plus 20 points. I would not be surprised. But I think it'll be a cheap late touchdown that makes it 48-35 Bama.
I think that's a fair assessment, just because remember Alabama when they blew out Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl, up 21-0 at the end of the first quarter, up 31-10 at the end of the first half, but only won 45-34, which I think the spread was Alabama by 12 or 11.5 or something. So Kyler Murray and the Sooners pulled out the ultimate backdoor cover. I'm not just picking this score for the meme and to remind all of the Notre Dame fans out there, but the nightmare of 2012. I'm going Bama 42-14, not inspired by Notre Dame's offensive performance against Clemson. I think that Devontae Smith, Mac Jones, and Najee Harris, who, if he had done a little more in the regular season, I think would have wrapped up the Heisman with that SEC championship performance. He was just absolutely phenomenal, and I'm sure his draft stock, he shot up boards probably 10, 12 spots with that. I mean, he was unbelievable in that game. Alabama huge. Sugar Bowl, 7.5-point favorite Clemson at 10-1, the number 2 team in the country against the 6-0. So I guess barely bowl eligible in a normal year. Ohio State Buckeyes at number 3, 65.5 is your over under this game in the Superdome. They're probably going to have fans, maybe going to have fans. I'm not sure what the fan policy is for either.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think they said 25% around there.
Oh, wow.
Or no, it's a little less. Wait, it's 25%.
The Saints aren't allowed to have fans right now in New Orleans.
No one wants to watch Drew Brees and Urban Ribs.
I would be surprised if it's more than just like players' families.
Yeah, it's 25% in Jerry World. That's what I was saying.
Oh, yeah.
It makes sense.
There are no rules in Texas or Florida.
But the Sugar Bowl will have fans because Dan Mullen would have pitched a fit before he got X'd from the playoff if they weren't. So,
William, your prediction for Clemson, Ohio State, part 3 now?
Part
Depends on how far you want to go back, because you can go all the way back to the 2013 Orange Bowl.
I'm not talking about the 2013 Orange Bowl. I'm talking about
that was bad. You can go back to the Fiesta Bowl in 16.
Yeah.
What year am I talking about? Yeah, that is 16.
William, your thoughts on the second semifinal?
Yeah, I think that this is going to be closer than a lot of people expect, and that's simply off the fact that Dabo put Ohio State at number 11 in his coaches' poll. And I think that's a motivation factor for Ohio State. Dude, I don't know if you guys saw the video of Ryan Day, like some player like recorded Ryan Day talking in the locker room about how they were going to take on any team that came their way. I mean, I don't know why it's a player to do that, but obviously this team has a lot of motivation coming into this one. I think that it's going to be close. I think it's going to be like last year's game. It's going to be back and forth. I think Clemson will eke it out. But Ohio State's not a team to be underestimated here, even with 6 wins. The Northwestern game definitely hurt their stock a little bit, but I think that it's going to be 28-27 Clemson in a real close one.
I think it's going to be a very competitive game as well. It's Ohio State only playing 6 games is a huge advantage to them. I mean, they are healthy, not counting COVID, even though it seems like every time they've played a game, 22 players have been out. So surely they all have the antibodies by now. I don't know. But I think Ryan Day will get his boys motivated for this, and they have a healthy roster. They're not tired. They can't really be. Although they didn't look great against Northwestern. I think that was a little bit of a fluke. The Wildcats were impressive. I think Clemson is going to win. I don't know how close it's going to be. I think the Buckeyes will cover the 7.5-point spread. I'm going to go Clemson 29-23. If you recognize that score, that's what it was last year. I think it's going to be a very similar matchup to last year's game. Trevor Lawrence is just a little bit better than Justin Fields. And the Clemson defense is just a little bit better than this year. They're a little bit more than just a little better than Ohio State. So I have the Tigers in a close one.
I think I'm the only one who's going to say something different from this. I texted Luke Stone immediately after the Big Ten championship game on Saturday. Ohio State does not deserve a playoff spot. And because I watched the Northwestern game, Justin Fields completed less than 50% of his passes against Northwestern. That's bad. That's really bad.
Considering they're the fighting Reese Davises, especially so.
So I hope it's close. I hope it's a competitive game. Like last year was one of the best games I've ever seen. But people are forgetting Justin Fields has not looked good this year. Okay. He Saturday completed less than 50% of his passes, threw 3 picks against Indiana about a month ago. And like, yeah, fatigue. This isn't a regular season game. Clemson played, they had a 2-week break from the end of the regular season to last weekend. And now they get another 2-week break. So that's 2 games in a month. They're not going to be that tired. And so I don't know. I don't think this is going to be – I thought I was being a little generous giving Clemson a 27-17 victory. But Ohio State looks bad. And Trevor Lawrence is not the guy you want to look bad against. I mean, Mac Jones, there's got to be a way to fool him because he has limited experience. Like, he hasn't seen a lot of stuff. He's seen some stuff. He hasn't seen a lot of defensive stuff. Trevor Lawrence has seen literally everything you can throw at him. And whatever LSU last year, it worked. And so maybe you try and replicate that, but Ohio State, I think they're not quite as overrated as Dabo thinks, but I don't think they're deserving of a playoff spot. I think Stone that if we moved to their system, nobody would argue that Ohio State deserves to be in the same class as Clemson. And that's not a 4-point game or anything like that. So I got Clemson by 10, probably a little bit more than that.
You know, I think that a lot of New York Jets fans out in the world are not going to like the slander of their week one starter for 2021. I don't really think they're going to like hearing Justin Fields, their knight in shining armor, be talked about in such a derogatory way. I'm going Clemson 34-30. I feel like it's going to be close just because I'm kind of giving Ohio State brand recency bias, if that makes sense. I would not be stunned if this is a Clemson blowout. I would be absolutely floored if Ohio State wins this by more than a possession. I don't think it's going to happen. I got Clemson 34-30, but it's like 50-50 that it's either that or a Clemson 20-point blowout. Not really sure. Fiesta Bowl, 4-2, Oregon Ducks, Pac-12 champions against the number 10 Iowa State Cyclones, the runners-up in the Big 12. Iowa State, 4.5-point favorite. Let's breeze through this because it's Oregon and we have a limited sample size, and are we really sure what team we're getting? William, start us off.
Yeah, this is a snooze fest for the Fiesta Bowl. Really have not seen much of Oregon. Iowa State, definitely a team that came on as of late. Still not sure about Brock Purdy, but Breece Hall is honestly in contention for one of the best running backs in the country. I'm simply going to go with an upset here, just probably relying on Kayvon Thibodeau and Oregon's pretty solid defense to frustrate Brock Purdy a little bit and hopefully make Matt Campbell lose his mind again. So I'm going to go Oregon 27, Cyclones 20.
I don't know about y'all, but I loved Iowa State head coach Matt Campbell's energy in the Big 12 championship. I mean, he was heated after that offsides. He was heated the whole game. I like that energy as a college football fan, and I think that he's going to have his Cyclones pumped up for this game. I can't see them losing the last two games of the season. This Cyclones team is very good, and they lost to a even better Oklahoma team by, what was it, 4 points? It was ended up being a close game down the stretch. I have Iowa State taking down the Ducks, which really don't deserve to be in the Fiesta Bowl, 38-28.
Yeah, hello, Auburn Tigers. You missed flying across the country to Idaho. You missed Matt Campbell as a head coaching candidate because this guy is – it's hard to – it's basically a one-year sample, but you have to love what you like. Like, I'm sorry, Boise State had an average year. You went and got their coach. You passed right over the state of Iowa going to Idaho. And so I don't understand why they did not stop in Ames, Iowa to get Matt Campbell. I got Iowa State 31-23. Oregon is 4-2 now. They should not have even been in their conference championship game. It's kind of a joke. They've got great players. Kayvon Thibodeau is a future top five pick. But this is just – I don't think this merits – unless you're a diehard college football fan, I do not see you watching this game. And I got Iowa State 31-23 with a late Oregon touchdown. It's kind of like that Alabama-Notre Dame game. Like, it's not going to be that close, but the score is going to make it look a lot closer than it was.
I just want this to be like the 2016 Alamo Bowl when TCU beat Oregon 47-41. We got Big 12 versus Oregon, high-scoring game. I'm going Oregon 42-38. Not going to lie, I know nothing about either team. I'm just going to go with Oregon on a hunch like I did last week, and it worked. I will say this about the Matt Campbell thing briefly. I think the reason Auburn didn't offer him is because they were too ashamed that Matt Campbell probably would have said no. And Auburn, that job became almost unwantable by the time they got to week two of the coaching search. Total debacle. But let's move on to the Orange Bowl. 8-1 Texas A&M against the number 5 team in the country, obviously, against the number 13 North Carolina Tar Heels. A&M, a 7-point favorite. William.
We were talking about this earlier. I mean, the A&M's got to be pissed off. You know, Florida was in the Orange Bowl last year playing a number 25 Virginia, and granted, they didn't have a playoff spot, but still, for A&M to be on the cusp of making the playoff and then have to play North Carolina without De'Ami Brown, Michael Carter, and Chaz Surratt, I don't think – I did put A&M winning 37-30. I don't know if it's going to be that close. You know, Jay was saying earlier, Javonte Williams is a very suitable replacement for Michael Carter, but that's a big loss for their passing offense. And I think A&M is just going to be pissed. They're going to want to finish the season and prove that they should have been in the playoff, and they're going to get a win under Jimbo.
Jay, how significant are the opt-outs for the Tar Heels?
So, the loss of Michael Carter, he's a phenomenal player. He'll probably be a third-round pick if I had to guess right now. I mean, it's significant. He's a really good player. He was first-team all-conference. But Javonte Williams is, like, they're 1A and 1B. They are quite literally basically the same player. Javonte Williams has a little more power. Carter's a little more speed. But they both affect the passing game. They both run between the tackles. They both run stretch plays. They both run toss plays. They both pass protect. So I mean, it's a loss, obviously, because you want as much depth and you can rotate them as much as possible. But Javonte Williams is technically he was our starter anyway. Michael Carter was supposed to be the third down back who ended up going into a three down role. So I don't think the Michael Carter loss is that significant. The De'Ami Brown loss is what's the significant one because he's our deep threat. Daz Newsome's phenomenal on the other side, but it's what makes the two of them, it's kind of similar. You can't key in on one of them because the other one's too dangerous to just leave alone. And De'Ami Brown was typically the deep shot guy that would open up the middle of the field for our RPO game. But and losing Brown is just that's the one I'm real worried about. Chaz Surratt is a phenomenal linebacker. He'll probably be a second round pick. But Jeremiah Gimmel ran beside him. He was technically our team captain anyway, so it's not even Chaz Surratt was our best linebacker. Gimmel was kind of the brains of the operation. So the De'Ami Brown loss, Taft, is the one that everybody needs to be concerned about, and I think that's what's going to end up doing Carolina in the end. So go ahead.
Well, last time UNC played a game, it was in Hard Rock Stadium, and they're right back there for the Orange Bowl. And when they played that game against Miami, they absolutely tore it up in the run game, putting up 62 points against not a great Hurricanes defense, but still 62 points is a lot against anybody. I think the Aggies defense is a lot better than Miami's, but I think UNC will still have success in the run game. I think A&M is just a little better, and Jimbo's going to have his boys pumped up after they got snubbed, according to him, from the playoff. I don't think they should have been in, but I think the Aggies will win 35-31.
This is a very hard game for me to pick because not only is it my school, is it Carolina finally on a big stage, but I'm also going to the game, staying at Luke Stone's house. So this is very personal for me, and this is very difficult. Taft has a video of me junior year at Woodbury, so spring of 2018, watching Duke actually barely beat UCF in the tournament and me crying literally because I wanted them to lose so badly because I'm that deeply Carolina is literally everything to me. So picking this game is extraordinarily difficult, but it is my job to give an unbiased opinion on a score, and I think Texas A&M will win 24-17. I'll leave it at that.
Jay, if you need to stay at our house for a little longer because your parents won't let you back in for picking against Carolina, I understand. I'm going A&M 33-23 here. Opt-outs for Carolina significant. Great season, step in the right direction for Coach Mack. In a weird way, because of my odd relationship with Jimbo Fisher, I'm kind of pulling for Mack Brown over him, but I would never say I'm pulling for the University.
Kind of pull. You cannot stand Jimbo Fisher. He was the Florida Gators' father for however 5-10 years, whatever he was in.
That is true. A&M 33-23. Move into our next segment, Locks of the Week. Boys, we're going to go with something a little different here. We're going to do speed round. So you get one full play clock at the college and NFL level, 40 seconds per person. Jay, you are our first lock of the week.
So I got Marshall covering 4.5 over Buffalo. I think they'll win outright, so you can take the money line there too. Marshall is a really good football team. I watched them play App State earlier in the season. They only held App State to 3 points, which is phenomenal. So I got Marshall plus 4.5 over Buffalo. Miami, I think they'll win outright over Oklahoma State. They're currently a 2-point dog. I'll take the Hurricanes. Tulsa, they've looked really good. They just lost to Cincinnati by 3. They get a really bad Mississippi State team. I got them minus 2.5 to win by probably a touchdown to that.
Like pocket 10.
And then the Pittsburgh Steelers only being a 1.5-point underdog is disrespectful to Indianapolis. I got the Colts minus 1.5. They should win by 2 touchdowns.
Just in the nick of time, he gets the snap off. All right. Next one up, Taft. Lock of the week.
My lock of the week is UGA versus Cincinnati over 50.5. Like I said earlier, UGA with JC Daniels has hit the over by far in every game that they've had him as a starter. I think this game's going way over 50.5. So that's my lock. To give some other games that I think you should put your money down, looking at the college football playoff, Bama, Notre Dame, I think Notre Dame's going to keep it within 19.5. Clemson, Ohio State, I think Ohio State's going to keep it within 7.5. I hope both of those stand true just for the sake of our pleasure on New Year's Day watching those playoff games. And then I also have Oklahoma money line They're +3 right now against Florida. And I also think the over is going to that game 72. It's going to be a shootout, but I have the Sooners winning outright and more than 72 points scored.
Lay a game on Taft, but we'll allow it. William, locks of the week.
All right, I'll fly through this. I'm going with the spread. Liberty is 7-point dogs versus Coastal. I'm going to take Liberty. Talked about this. I like Malik Willis. I like Hugh Freeze. Liberty is almost undefeated. They had their undefeated record spoiled by a pretty solid, or at least against Liberty, NC State team. Oh, shoot. All right. So they lost 15-14 against NC State. I think they'll cover the spread here or beat Coastal. Then I have the Bills. They are 7-point favorites over New England. I think that they will cover. Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs are great. Gilmore's out for the season. Pat's offense has been very suspect, and the Bills want to prove they're the top dog in the AFC East. Thank you.
Got the snap off right at the end there. Well done. All right. I got three from the NFL. So number one, Bears 7.5-point favorites against the Jags. Bears have won two straight, resurrecting their playoff chances. Jags, I think, have lost 13 in a row, the last two by 20 plus. Mr. And of course, in the driver's seat, in the driver's seat for the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes, how could you possibly blow that? Bears 30, Jags 17 or 16. Eagles -1.5 over the Cowboys. Dallas, worst team against the spread in the NFL. Philly was an extra point away from having covered twice in a row with Hurts. And Dallas has been burned by mobile QBs this year. Losses to Wilson, Murray, and Jackson. All right, I'm at 8 seconds. Titans +3.5. 76% of bets so far for Tennessee. Titans have had five straight games of 30 plus, and Ryan Tannehill got snubbed. Feed Derrick Henry in the snow. And Titans 28-27. Okay. Throwback sports thing of the week. We got LaMichael James, the ultimate throwback. Who's taking it?
I had a lot of fun making this. This took me back to the national championship, the Auburn Oregon national championship, I believe 2011. This was when I don't even know who was starting at quarterback for Oregon.
Darren Thomas.
Darren Thomas Stone. We got Darren him. Darren Thomas was a monster, and this was when he wore number one too. This wasn't when he wore five in the Rose Bowl.
This is the Michael Dyer game. This is pre Trey Mason. This is when Oregon was rocking the – probably in the prime of their uniforms, rocking the – I think the silver chrome with the – I still have these socks. The neon Volt socks. I got them off eBay, like, right after. And LaMichael James is the poster boy of that uni. A little bit about this guy. I think we all know that he was a pretty much a complete bust in the NFL. I didn't know this. Rushed for 1,500 yards in three consecutive seasons, left after his junior year, and had at least 14 touchdowns each season. Finished third in Heisman voting as a sophomore. And in 2010, when he got third in Heisman voting, that wasn't even his most – the season where he had his most rushing yards. He ended up with 1,731 rushing yards and 24 total touchdowns. Both led the country in 2010. And then the year after, when he kind of split carries with – Kenyon Barner, also a guy we could have on this, strictly based off his senior season alone, had 1,805 rushing yards his junior year. Wasn't in contention for the Heisman, but he's second in Oregon career rushing yards and touchdowns behind a fellow bust, Royce Freeman. Number one in total touchdowns in 2010, number four in the Pac-12 for career rushing yards and touchdowns. I mean, That Oregon team, D'Anthony Thomas, LaMichael James, Darren Thomas.
Josh Huff.
Was this Braylon Addison? I think Braylon Addison might have been on that team.
Keenan Lowe was on the come up.
Keenan Lowe and who am I forgetting? Kenyon.
Jeff Mayle caught a 99-yard pass in that game from the 1-yard line and did not score. Or so I guess 98 yards.
Oh, God.
Another NFL bust, Chip Kelly, was involved with that team.
Yes, a lot of busts on that team. I don't think
Mark
Darren Helfrich Thomas
is the OC.
Oh my gosh,
who's now on in the ESPN broadcasting booth? I did not know that till I watched the Pac-12 championship game last week.
Didn't know that either.
Can they get Bill to do the Pac-12 championship football games? I just feel like that'd make it more interesting.
I can't listen to him talk.
Bill Walton
Michael
is
James also notably changed his name to LaMike to resurrect his career. He went by LaMike his last two seasons on NFL practice squads. Kind of a whole rebirth thing didn't really work. Anyway, thank you for your hard work to make LaMichael James the throwback sports thing of the week presented by the Pool and Weed Eater Independence Bowl, and the FBC Mortgage Cure Bowl, Liberty, against number 11, Coastal Carolina, coming to your TVs on Saturday. All right, facts or fake news? We're going to start off with our fan-submitted question. It was supposed to be our fifth and final one, but we're going to start with this. The Cowboys should trade Ezekiel Elliott. I'll let the Cowboy take this one first. Jay Benzette, you've got a pretty giant Cowboys thing behind you right now. Facts or fake news?
This is a fact. If you watch the Liam Desmond, who submitted this question, Luke, your former roommate, one of our dearest friends here at the podcast.
Ex-roommate.
Liam Desmond, Bo Watts, and I have had a how about them Snapchat group chat since week one. And every time we watch a Cowboy, every time a Cowboys game is on national television for me, because I don't have NFL Red Zone, we talk about the game during the game. And Liam brought this point up during the beginning of the season. He's saying we need to trade Zeke, get his massive contract off the books, because Tony Pollard is a more than capable replacement for a heck of a lot less money. And I thought, you're ridiculous. Oh, whatever. Zeke's been the face of our franchise with Dak, blah, blah, blah. 21-4, all the rookie season, leading rushing champ, blah, blah, blah. And then Sunday happened, and Tony Pollard went berserk, and Zeke Elliott hasn't known squat since Dak got out. That got hurt. And so I started thinking about it, and I'm like, I hate Stone, you know, I hate to admit this, but Liam Desmond was correct. I cannot stand saying those words of all people, but he's right. The Cowboys definitely should trade Ezekiel Elliott, because Tony Pollard, I think, is a better running back than Zeke is. And he's a heck of a lot less money. And Zeke has a brand name. You can get him for a decent chunk in return. So trade him, keep Tony Pollard, and you will be better off. So that's a fact. Trade Zeke Elliott.
William?
Yeah, I'm going to go fact. Extremely impressed by Tony Pollard this past weekend. And I think that what separates him from Zeke a little bit is he is a very, very capable receiving back as well. We never really saw Zeke take over that role too much in the offense. And I think that what the Cowboys could get out of this for their defense would be huge. If they could get some pieces for the defense by trading Zeke and keeping Pollard, that'll help this team as a whole. So I think that that is a fact.
The Cowboys need to do a lot within their franchise just to make them a better team than they've been as of recent. And one way to do that is by changing your star player, which apparently is Zeke based on what his contract says. I agree with what Jay and William have said, and I think that's a fact. Get him out of there. Tony Pollard's good enough, and there's a lot more problems in Dallas.
This is just a general thing. NFL teams, running backs are not worth what you are paying them. Like, think about Christian McCaffrey.
There's one phenomenal guy. Derrick Henry's the only guy.
Christian's worth it.
How many games have the Panthers won with Christian McCaffrey?
Look, just wait until we get Zach Wilson or Justin Fields with the number 4 or 3 pick.
Yeah, exactly. Number 4, number 3 pick. They are not – one injury – okay, Christian McCaffrey was more than one injury. One injury to his high ankle screwed the Panthers for the entire season, because they put so much into him, so much game plan into him, so much – so many money resources. Do not pay running. They are not worth. Okay, Derrick Henry is an exception, I think, Stone, because that's just their mentality as a football team, is that kind of physical run right at you. Alvin Kamara is not worth what the Saints gave him. I'm sorry. Taysom Hill ran the ball basically the same as Alvin Kamara did for the weeks that Taysom Hill played, and Taysom Hill is a quarterback. I used to think running backs were worth it because they're big brand names and whatever, big toys. Spend your money on the offensive line to protect your quarterback and get some capable receivers, and you will be much better. James Robinson was an undrafted rookie coming out of the draft and is in the contention for rookie of the year. That should say enough about running backs right there.
I mean, you got to think, every year it seems like there's a guy who gets drafted in the third round at running back who we love to make an immediate impact. I think Jonathan Taylor was a second rounder, but the last couple of years, these drafts have been super deep. I mean, this year you're going to get Najee, ETN, maybe you're going to get Trey Sermon. And then I'm forgetting another big name. Who's the other massive?
Michael Carter. I don't know. Chuba's lost a lot of stock, but you could still get him late. I don't know if Breece Hall is eligible. I don't think he is.
There are a couple other guys.
It's not as deep as it was last year, but they're the top of this draft is better than last year's.
Yeah, there are enough guys who are around that you can draft, and there are enough guys who are going to end up being free agents. Like James White might be a free agent, but this upcoming offseason. But paying Zeke Elliott's not worth it. I would say facts, they should try to trade Zeke Elliott, but I don't know what GM in the NFL is going to be dumb enough to take on the cap hit. Here is Zeke's cap hit, according to SpotTrack, for the next couple years. So 2021, he's a $13 million cap hit, 13.7. 2022, 16.5. 2023, 15. 2024, 12.6. And then the last 2 years of the deal, 15.4 and 16.6 at ages 30 and 31. Who on earth wants to have that contract? Who on earth wants that contract? I don't think they're going to be able to move it. Facts or fake news number two, Deshaun Watson should be a Pro Bowler. He was elected to the team along with Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen. He's the third string quarterback in the AFC. Do we buy Deshaun Watson as a Pro Bowler?
I think this is a fact because you got to think about who in the AFC is in the contention. You got Mahomes, obviously, perennial, like he's Mr. Pro Bowl basically for the rest of his life. Josh Allen is phenomenal. I think the Bills are the second best team in football. And who else? Lamar has had a really down year.
Tannehill.
Yeah.
Tannehill, maybe.
I would say Tannehill.
It's down to Tannehill and Herbert.
My point with this.
And so Deshaun Watson, like, it's just out of sheer respect for what he's had to go through. Like, he's in it. You trade away his number one option. His number two option has been taking performance-enhancing drugs all year. His third option.
He should have been better. Should have been better if he's been on PEDs the whole year.
He's throwing to Kiki QT and Chad Hansen.
Exactly.
That's the point.
That's who he has. David Johnson, another overpaid running back. What a shock. Hasn't done anything. He caught 10 passes last week and made the national news. So it's just he deserves it because it's out of sheer respect. This guy is super freaky talented. But the Texans have screwed it. He needs to demand a trade immediately out of Houston because he is that good. He could win a Super Bowl right now, but they're not treating him like it. And it's just out of sheer respect that he deserves to be in the Pro Bowl. I think this is a fact.
I'm with William on this, where it's either Tannehill or it's Justin Herbert who's in contention with him. I think outside of that, you're making kind of a stretch argument for it. You could possibly say if Pro Bowl voting ended in like week 10, you would say Roethlisberger, but now I don't think anyone wants anything to do with Ben Roethlisberger. Watson versus Tannehill head-to-head, 4,100 yards for Watson, 70% on his completions, 27 touchdowns, 6 picks. Tannehill's got 3,400 yards, 66.5% of his completions, 31 touchdowns, 5 picks. The reason that I think that Tannehill deserves this just a little more than Deshaun Watson is I think that at some point your team's performance has to matter. Deshaun Watson had a huge fumble against Indianapolis that cost him a game late in that one. That obviously shouldn't be the deciding factor here, but I think Tannehill.
Think about why they were in that game to begin with.
Oh, I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying that Ryan Tannehill is on a team that is going to make the playoffs in all, I think, probably 99% likelihood at this point. And I think that him coming to Tennessee really helped unlock Derrick Henry and make him all that much more useful because they actually had someone who could throw a ball deep down the field and was durable enough to not basically become as injury prone as Mariota. And I just think Tannehill, with the way he's played the last couple of years, there's some weird comparisons to Mahomes. He's obviously nowhere near that because he's not a game changer like Mahomes is. But I think that when you're talking Pro Bowl, a guy who's just as good, maybe not as talented, but whose team is better and whose stats are as good, I would go Deshaun Watson. I think fake news. He does not deserve to be a Pro Bowler, either Herbert or Tannehill. Take your pick.
I'm going to go with fact here, just strictly based off of how valuable Deshaun Watson is to the Texans organization, even though they're having, once again, a terrible season. But I want to focus on the bigger crime that is the Pro Bowl voting and the amount of snubs we saw this year. I don't know how in any world Evan Engram makes the Pro Bowl over Robert Tonyan, who has 10 touchdowns, or Logan Thomas. Engram has one touchdown. Also, the hype around Chase Young making the Pro Bowl over Brian Burns and Trey Hendrickson is absolutely ridiculous. I know that the Pro Bowl is based off voting, and we'll see the all-pro teams come out, and that'll be more based off of stats and less about voting. But, I mean, it's – big names like Chase Young and Bobby Wagner and Harrison Smith, like 10-year-olds aren't going to stop voting for those guys because, you know, they have them in Madden Mobile. So that's what it's come to, you know, and it's guys are just getting snubbed left and right. Jesse Bates not making the Pro Bowl.
The real problem. Ridiculous.
Emmanuel Ogba.
Stephon Gilmore made it. Oh, yeah.
J.C. Jackson had, I think, how many picks did J.C. Jackson have this season? Seven?
I thought he got to eight. Or was that Xavier Howard last week, sir? Xavier hit eight last week. Ogba leads the league in sacks and did not make the Pro Bowl. That's the problem.
Yeah. Right?
That's the main problem. That's ridiculous. Like, even if you don't know his name, he's the Stone. I voted with Stone on a FaceTime call. When you go to DNs, the very first person is Emmanuel Ogba. Leads league in sacks. It goes by sacks, and people did not vote Emmanuel Ogba. He's at the top of the page and leads league in sacks. It's not that hard. Give him respect.
Taff, facts or fake news on Deshaun?
I've gone back and forth hearing you guys talk about it. I think that I wish that the Pro Bowl committee would – it's not a committee. What am I talking about? I wish that it'd be a little more diverse in guys that it would give it to, and guys like Justin Herbert, who's had a great season. He's younger. I wish that he would be in. But just solely looking at stats, Deshaun Watson is a top three quarterback in the AFC and therefore should get in. And out of respect of what he's been given, I think it's a fair. I think he deserves his spot as a Pro Bowler.
A quick note on the Ogba thing. So Frank Clark made the Pro Bowl, and despite having 5 sacks, 19 solo tackles, and nothing else, Emmanuel Ogba has 9 sacks, 3 forced fumbles, and 24 solo tackles. It's just unbelievable how guys get voted in on pedigree, and I wish that the fan vote was not the method that we determined our All-Stars anymore. Facts or fake news, number 3, the Pittsburgh Steelers will lose their wild card game. Do we have anyone who's going to say fake news here? That's the real question.
They don't deserve to be in the wild card game. That's ridiculous.
It's fake news only if Juju stops with the TikTok antics, because that might bring the Steelers back out of this hole. And I know that Tomlin has to be on him about that.
Stone, the better question would be, are they going to lose their division in 2 weeks when they lose to the Browns in week 17?
The fact that that's even in play for an 11-0 team is exactly why I'm saying facts. They're going to lose their wild card game. I don't know who the matchup's going to end up being. It depends on how the last couple of weeks shake out.
They're going to lose their division. Like, they played the Colts this week, and they're going to get curb stomped, and then they're going to get just thrashed by Cleveland in week 17. It's going to be bad.
I mean, right now, it's not even that I like every team currently in the playoffs. I like every team within shouting distance of the playoffs more than I like the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. Buffalo beats them. Kansas City beats them, I think. Cleveland probably will end up beating them in 2 weeks. Tennessee and Indianapolis, I both like more. We'll see with Indy.
Baltimore would smoke.
Yeah, Baltimore, I love them. And even against Miami, despite Miami's limitations on offense, and even without all of their best receivers, I would still probably take Miami in like some bizarre 19-17 game right there. The Steelers look terrible. They're absolutely losing the first round of the playoffs unless they have some major reckoning within that locker room in the next 2 weeks. In total free fall.
Big Ben looks terrible, too. I mean, he needs to go. Steelers need change, even though he led him to an 11-0 record.
The problem is next year, I was watching Get Up yesterday. If they keep Ben Roethlisberger on his current contract, he's taking up 25% of their cap space next year with a decreased salary cap.
Kyle Trask, welcome to the Pittsburgh Steelers, my friend. Yeah,
it's like $40-something million next year if they keep Ben Roth. If they don't extend him and reduce the money next year, he's taking up 25% of their total cap space. But they got to do something with him.
Any other takers on fake news here? Or are we all in agreement the Steelers are out?
They look like a team more deserving of the first overall pick than a playoff spot. So,
yeah,
I'm going to say it's facts that they lose their wild card game.
That's fair. Fact or fake news number 4. If I were an NBA GM, I would trade for James Harden. And we're assuming that you can't, like, trade the equivalent of Juwan Howard in 2014 for James Harden. Like, you've got to give up a haul for him. Anyone want him?
No. Under no circumstances.
Yeah, I'd say fake news, too. It's just – it's such a – why would you if you're a contender, why do you want to have to give up all of the pieces, your role players, your bench guys who win the playoffs are going to – really be there for you? Like if you're Denver, for example, why do you want to give up MPJ or possibly even Jamal Murray or Gary Trent, or sorry, Gary Trent's in Portland. But why would you want to give up like one of your young budding stars for a guy who's in his 30s, came back from camp, for the preseason looking fat, like not out of shape, but like legitimately looking fat? Why do you want that on your roster? If you're trying to build a contender, why do you give up your future assets?
You're trading for a known toxicity. It is bad. Do not. He's kind of what's
it's like Antonio. He's Antonio Brown, I think. Yes. At this point,
you do not trade for Antonio Brown. You let him come to you in free agency.
Yeah. Why do you want that?
Anything for him? You don't give him a box of cookies to come play for you.
And you definitely don't want to give James Harden a box of cookies right now. No. It's kind of the last thing he needs.
Because he hit the Golden Corral three meals a day for like a month.
That chocolate fountain at the Golden Corral was left in quite the state of disarray once James Harden hit it 2 years ago. All right, our final facts or fake news. NBA opening night knee-jerk reactions. The Brooklyn Nets are going to win the Eastern Conference.
So this is ridiculous.
What?
Recency bias.
Fake news? Defend fake news.
Are you saying Milwaukee Bucks?
Okay, continue. Why do you think in a 7-game series?
The Milwaukee, they have to break through at some point. The Bucks do. They just added Drew Holiday. Got rid of Eric Bledsoe, who can't hit the side of a barn. Brought in Drew Holiday to go with Chris Middleton and Giannis. Are you serious?
I think they have to break through at some point argument is exactly what happened with the Houston Rockets with James Harden. Oh, they have to break through at some point.
No, Golden State existed. Nobody said that they were going to beat Golden State, especially with Kevin Durant.
I'm just saying, I don't think Milwaukee, if they haven't broken through by now, I know Giannis is on the Supermax and everything, but this Brooklyn team looked really good last night. The Warriors, obviously, I think the main thing is they looked terrible. Steph Curry was bad. Andrew Wiggins was bad. Kelly Oubre was atrocious in that game.
The Warriors did look bad.
Wiseman is kind of the, in fitting Christmas fashion, a three from James Wiseman in the opening sequence of that game was kind of the only thing they had going for him. Warriors are plummeting, but that's beside the point. I think Brooklyn wins the East this year. I think that they look really legit. I love Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni on that coaching staff. And I think that basically Steve Nash is played with Dwight Howard and is enough accustomed to just really weird guys who are going to burn sage in Boston upon their return. I think this has a lot of a feel of like, basically Dennis Rodman was a known quantity as being a whack job. I think Kyrie is a known quantity as a whack job, and I think they'll manage it well. And I think that they'll beat Milwaukee just because Kevin Durant, I think, is going to be a lot better than people anticipate.
I still got Milwaukee. I'll leave it at that.
William Taft, any interest in chiming in?
I would probably go with I think that somehow the Heat could probably make their way through the Eastern Conference again. You don't think so? I think that they could pull some magic out again. Or the Bucks, obviously. I think that Mamadou Diakite will probably be their best player this year. And Giannis will be a very good compliment to him. And they've got one of the best, one of the most well-rounded teams in the NBA. And Mamadou will certainly contribute to that. But I'm going to go with either the Heat or the Bucks. I don't think the Celtics have much of a chance. And I think that the Nets are going to fall apart at some point this season with all that drama that Kyrie's bringing to the table.
I'm just saying the Sixers are a sleeper. Just kidding. No, they're not.
I'm going to take the field here. I think that the Nets are going to have a great season, but I think the East is a lot more spread out this year than it has been in the past, 10 years, ever since LeBron really has been there. So I think that the Nets are going to have a good season. They'll probably make it to the Eastern Conference Final, but I'll take the field.
All right, and that is all she wrote for episode 29 of Stone Cold Sports Talk. Thank you all for tuning in. Enjoy the important bowl games coming up, especially the Cheez-It Bowl. As Jay told us, weird score loading for that game.
This is quite literally the weirdest sporting event in American sports. Like it's honestly, it's just weird. It's like an alien comes down and directs the game, and it's just like you have no idea what to expect.
They got Hugh Freeze up there in in the box giving the thumbs up on the headset.
Gene Chizik is calling defenses still in the site where they won a national championship. Who you'd never know what's going on.
Wait, Gene Chizik is what?
No. He's calling defensive plays for both teams because he's still just living his glory days winning a national championship there. It's just weird stuff that goes on.
One final note on Auburn. Congratulations to Brian Harsin, however you pronounce his last name, for being the one to finally take that job when he gets fired in three years. He'll become a great offensive analyst for Nick Saban.
Mac Holman texted me last night saying, yes, Bama's never losing in my lifetime again.
Yeah, Auburn, total catastrophe there. Thank you all for tuning in. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. We will see you again soon.